This episode is brought to you by Chris Salee, your local health markets insurance agency. Creative solutions for your health, Medicare, and life insurance needs. Personalized advice at 503-678-5768.
Today's episode is also brought to you by Canby Foursquare Church. Since 1978, a place to grow, connect, and serve. Find out more at canbyfoursquare.com or on Sunday mornings at 9 and 11.
Welcome to the Canby Now podcast,
your source for news.
The threat of a possible teacher strike was avoided this week.
There's a new irresistibly cute creature winning over fans, and its name is Scootaloo.
Sports?
It's like Lucy in the football. You want to kick a field goal, but they take it away from you.
We had to learn how to win.
Goal can't be in the last second of the game!
And interesting conversations.
Because I'm one of the strongest girls ever, and I know that for a fact.
I just really enjoy writing gossip as if I was a bear.
With an old maid daughter that make the best moonshine in the coast.
If it would have hit me in the face, I think I would have died. I really do.
I guarantee you would have died, man. Are you kidding me?
Parents, get ready for a lot more quality time with your kids. Governor Kate Brown on Monday announced a month-long extension of Oregon's statewide school closure, which now must remain closed until at least April 28th in a continued effort to stem the spread of coronavirus or COVID-19. This follows an initial two-week closure to Oregon's schools that would have ended on March 31st. Her new orders and guidance for public schools across Oregon include that while school facilities are to remain closed until April 28th, districts must provide learning supports and supplemental services to students and families during the closure, including meals and childcare. This includes the delivery of food assistance and offering childcare for essential healthcare professionals and first responders. School districts may also call on public school educators and employees to deliver limited learning and support services. Governor Brown is further requiring that each district continue to pay all their regular employees during the closure. The governor said she does not take the decision to extend school closures lightly. This will have real impacts on Oregon's students, parents, and educators. But we must act now to flatten the curve and slow the rate of COVID-19 transmission in Oregon. Otherwise, we face a higher strain on our medical system and a greater loss of life to this disease. In a message to Canby School District families Tuesday, Superintendent Tripp Goodall confirmed local facilities would remain closed to all students and most staff, and the district will continue to provide grab-and-go meals for all children under 18 during the extended closure. He also said the district's custodians will continue to deep clean all schools to ensure they remain disinfected for when students and staff return. We know this is a trying time and that the closure of our schools is a challenge, Superintendent Goodall said. Please know we are doing all we can to plan for our students' return and are looking for additional guidance from the Oregon Department of Education on how to equitably deliver learning opportunities to all students during this extended closure. He encouraged parents to help their children understand the importance of this national health emergency by encouraging social distancing, good hand hygiene, avoiding people who are sick, and covering their coughs and sneezes. I will be in touch with more information as soon as we have a plan to navigate this extended closure, Goodall said. Please do what you can to help prevent the spread of this virus. On Wednesday, the OSAA followed the governor's lead and extended their suspension of spring sports through April 28th. No practices, contests, or use of school facilities is permitted. The speech state championships and solo music state championships, scheduled for April 23rd through the 25th and May 2nd, respectively, have also been canceled. Canby Mayor Brian Hodson has declared a state of emergency in the city of Canby as of March 17th, effective until June 30th.
This action follows the lead of Clackamas County and the state as leaders continue to grapple with the unprecedented public health crisis of the global COVID-19 pandemic. Mayor Hodson told the Cambie Now podcast he made the call after a series of meetings with Cambie Fire District Chief Jim Davis, Interim City Administrator Amanda Zyber, Cambie Police Lieutenant George Tro, and Council President Tim Dale. This declaration is for precautionary measures only, Mayor Hodson stressed. By declaring the emergency, this allows myself and the city staff greater flexibility to quickly address hazards posed by COVID-19, as well as access to extra resources. As of the morning of March 18th, there are no suspected cases or confirmed cases of COVID-19 in Cambie, the mayor said. Per the municipal code, Mayor Hodson's declaration must be approved by the city council. The next council meeting is scheduled for April 1st, 2020, but we may consider a special emergency meeting to address a few timely issues, Zyber said in an email. We are working on the logistics of a remote or virtual public meeting. According to the declaration signed by Mayor Hodson at 5:34 p.m. on Tuesday, the action allows the mayor and city staff greater flexibility to quickly address hazards posed by the COVID-19 virus by facilitating more expedient coordination with public agencies and quicker deployment of resources and staffing to safeguard the community. It also provides for the ability to modify work schedules of emergency responders to meet reduced staffing or increased emergency responses due to the COVID-19 situation. The state of emergency declaration provides the city with the latitude to coordinate an effective response by redirecting funding for emergency use as needed and suspending standard procurement procedures per the city code. Additionally, this designation aids the city's efforts when requesting assistance and/or reimbursement for expenditures related to the COVID-19 response. Clackamas County had been one of the first local governments in Oregon to declare a state of emergency on March 2nd, calling it, quote, a precautionary measure. Initially set to expire March 16th, the county's state of emergency was later extended through June 30th. In a press conference on Monday, Governor Kate Brown announced a new executive order aimed at increasing social distancing in the state of Oregon, further reducing the size of public gatherings and limiting the operation of restaurants and bars. All public gatherings over the size of 25 people are now barred through the end of the month, Governor Brown said, with the exception of essential locations like workplaces, grocery stores, pharmacies, and retail stores. She also said that people are encouraged to avoid gatherings of 10 people or more in accordance with the latest recommendations of the Centers for Disease Control and President Donald Trump. Quote, my goal is to protect the health and safety of Oregon families. Every step we are taking is being made with community input and careful consideration of its impacts, Governor Brown said. Each action has a ripple effect across our state, both on a personal and economic level, but we can overcome these hurdles in an Oregon way. By working together, we are stronger, even if it's in ways we never thought possible. Restaurants and bars can no longer serve food inside their businesses. They may provide only drive-through, delivery, and mobile service. Restaurants are urged to evaluate if their operations can handle a takeout-only business at this time. Other businesses are urged to evaluate their social distancing capabilities with a recommended distance of allowing people to stay at least 6 feet apart. Any businesses found to be in violation of the new guidelines will be subject to a Class C misdemeanor. I know that while these actions will impact Oregon businesses and employees, they will help decrease the rate of infection while bringing state and federal resources up to the same speed as the spread of the virus, said Governor Brown. The governor had been mulling the extraordinary measure of imposing a curfew or full-on closing the state's restaurants and bars, following the lead of states such as Illinois, Ohio, and Massachusetts, who have already done so. An open letter signed by more than 60 workers in the state's food and beverage industries had urged Brown to take this move while also requesting financial support for businesses and their employees in the weeks to come. Canby Mayor Brian Hodson, who was on a conference call with the governor Sunday where she had discussed her thinking on the issue, said he is worried about the impact the move will have on the local restaurants and watering holes that are a big part of what makes Canby, well, Canby. You know, my concerns are for Gwyn's Coffee House, Backstop Bar and Grill, and other similar businesses in our town, particularly ones not equipped to do an increased volume of takeout orders, Mayor Hodson said. I want to ensure our businesses are prepared for this and that they ultimately thrive. I pray it is a decision that balances the need to control this outbreak with the survival of the small businesses. For a list of Canby's areas, restaurants, takeout menus, phone numbers, and other information, visit our website at canbynowpod.com. COVID-19 has claimed another casualty as leaders at all levels of government continue to take extraordinary action in an effort to slow the spread of the global coronavirus pandemic. The latest closure is the Canby Ferry, the service of which will be suspended effective March 18th. At this time, the ferry is scheduled to reopen on April 6th. So, unless coronavirus figures out how to swim, the folks on the other side of the river should be safe. Seriously though, the announcement comes on the heels of yesterday's news that the Board of Commissioners has closed most county buildings to the public at least through April 6th. The county said in a press release that its government will remain open for business to the greatest extent possible, with the goal of providing services remotely or virtually as much as possible. Courts and law enforcement are remaining open on a limited basis. Many county employees have been instructed to telework from home. Many departments and public-facing services continue to operate virtually and will have staff available by phone during normal business hours. The Board of County Commissioners business meeting this Thursday, March 19th, is still scheduled for 10 a.m. Residents are encouraged to participate digitally. You can find a link and information about how to do this, as well as a list of county offices and phone numbers, on our website, canbynowpod.com. And now we'd like to share with you an essay written by Canby High School senior Ruby Kaiser. As a senior at Canby High School, I have been down in the dumps with the coronavirus and the uncertainty that it brings. This has caused myself and lots of my senior classmates a lot of anxiety, angst, and sadness. So I wanted to share my favorite memory from this year. This year, Canby showed me the true strength of a community during our state volleyball playoffs. Our expectations at the beginning of the year were, honestly, pretty low. In most of our minds, we would have probably get third or fourth in the league if we were lucky, make the playoffs, and then lose in the first round. That was kind of the norm. Every year since I was a freshman, we had lost in the first round, which meant we had still made the playoffs at least, so most everyone was happy with that. And somehow, with lots of hard work, determination, and team camaraderie, we were in the state tournament for the first time in over 10 years. We were matched up against third-ranked Mountainside High School, who were ranked 11th. They were definitely more athletically gifted, and everyone expected them to win, so you could definitely call us the underdogs. Volleyball plays best 3 out of 5 sets. We lost the first set, but it was pretty close. Then we got absolutely slaughtered in the second set. We lost 11-25. I remember looking into the bleachers and seeing the hundreds of Canby supporters. The bleachers were so full, they looked like they might collapse. It was a sea of navy blue from the bottom to the top. Not only was the student section massive, but parents, teachers, and the mayor, the school board, and other community members were in attendance. They were still cheering loud for us, even though we had just got our butts kicked. My head felt like it was underwater, my ears plugged from the noise. I could barely hear myself think, let alone call out the plays loud enough for my team to hear. We all huddled up. I looked at the team and we all started laughing. It lightened the mood, but we knew we had to get to work right away. I remember looking into the crowd and saying to the team, these people did not come here to see us lose in 3 sets. We are winning this next set and the one after that and then the one after that, okay? And you know what? That's exactly what we did.
We won 3 sets in a row and beat the 3rd-ranked team in the state. I've never felt more proud of my team. We did the seemingly impossible. And I honestly don't think we could have made that comeback without the support that we had from the community. How could we lose with so many people supporting us? Local businesses have donated meals and sponsored us. The school paid for us to stay in a hotel. The district got a rooster bus for the fans. And most importantly, people showed up. I can't even put into words how big of an impact it made to see hundreds of Cougar faithful up in the bleachers to cheer us on. It still brings tears to my eyes to think of this moment. It felt like a movie. We couldn't let all those people down. The community that had put so much faith in us. This year of high school volleyball felt like a dream. We ended up getting 3rd place in the state, the highest Canby High School has ever finished. That experience really made me appreciate Canby. I'm so glad I've grown up in a community that supports everyone so much. Yeah, this coronavirus, it's scary for everyone, but I know that we will get through it with the support of each other.
Hey, Tyler, I have to tell you about something.
All right.
This buddy of mine was telling me his internet bill went up right after the holidays. Can you believe it?
I'm sorry, what?
I know. Talk about a Grinch move, am I right?
Why would their bill go up at that time of year, Frankie?
Well, they said it was because of overage fees from going over their data cap. Probably because they had family home for the holidays with way more people than usual using their Wi-Fi. Think about it. You've got kids playing games online, parents streaming TV shows and movies, plus all of the devices everyone has that are connected to the Wi-Fi network. That's a lot of stuff using up data, and they were charged extra for it.
That's super weird. I didn't even know there were like actual things called data caps for internet providers. I use a ton of data every month right here in the studio. And I've never seen an extra fee.
Yeah, that's because we have DirectLink. With them, not only will we never be charged extra fees for using lots of data at any speed, but they also never slow down our internet speed for high usage. It's all part of their commitment to unlimited internet.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Well, hey, it sounds like your friend should switch over to DirectLink.
Yeah, no kidding.
We'd like to extend our undying gratitude to Canby Now Plus member Mark Williams. We rely on your monthly contributions to continue to do this work that we love. To find out how you can become one of the coolest people in the world, one of our supporters on Patreon, visit canbynowpod.com/plus.
All right, I'm at Gwen's Coffee House now, so if you hear a little background noise, or hopefully not the espresso machine, that's why, but here with the commander of the Canby Aurora VFW Veterans of Foreign War Post 6057, Martin Lackner. Hi, Martin.
How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good.
So tell me a little bit about your experience with the VFW Post, how long you've been there, some of the stuff you do, and then we're obviously going to talk about one of the main things you do, which just happened recently, but give us a little bit of an overview first.
I have been with VFW 10 years now and have worked in a position of an officer role since then. Our primary focus is to help veterans in need in our community and to support programs and opportunities that promote patriotism and remembrance of veterans and their sacrifice. Hmm.
And not to age you, but it's just one thing that I know, you're Gulf War, we're kind of talking about.
Correct.
That. You're a little bit of the more recent era of veteran and service member. And I understand VFW, American Legion, some of those legacy veterans organizations are having a little trouble recruiting some of the younger generations. There's not quite... that population isn't joining at the same rate or same numbers. Is that true, or is that something
that
you see?
That is true, and we like to affectionately refer to ourselves as sandbox veterans.
Yeah, sure.
So, in that way...
As opposed to icebox veterans.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, that would be Korea.
Right.
But,
yeah.
But at any rate, A lot of these organizations, you know, were founded a century ago.
Yeah.
And as you're very aware, our society is very different than it was a century ago.
Yeah.
And I think that it's important for these organizations to be able to adapt.
Yeah.
Fortunately for the VFW, it is a ground-up organization, and it actually says that in the bylaws. So we've got some freedom on a post-by-post basis to be able to conform to the needs of the community that we serve.
Yeah.
So, and that's you know, up to the command and the other officers.
A lot easier to sort of fit and tailor the organization to the folks that are actually being served by it or members of it that way.
That's true. Yeah. You know, and of course that's representative by its officer corps. You know, we have posts that, you know, still like to you know, do what we call the press and dress of the past in their post, and most of their members are older members.
Yeah.
But then you have a post like mine, being a younger veteran. I try to run my post, you know, more like a town hall kind of format, you know, where everyone has a voice, everyone has input.
Everyone's yelling. No, I'm just kidding.
Well,
depends on what town hall meetings you might have been to.
Yeah, everybody always has that one guy,
right.
You know, but, and we do have that one guy. Well, you know, we have some things where originally you could almost argue that some of the organizations, the VFW and the Legion, obviously being the oldest and around the longest, was almost an extension of your military career in many ways.
Yeah.
You know, so a lot of how the group was run was very strict and rigid, conforming to those same principles.
Yeah, a bit of an exit ramp, if you will.
An exit ramp, or in the cases of some members, a continuation.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it's not an exit.
Exactly, yeah. You know, a way to, you know, if you've done it for 30 years and you finally find yourself retired and you're out in the community, it's really hard to fit in. So in some cases, this is where you go.
Yeah.
And to that end, at least with the VFW here in Canby, we do offer the opportunity to learn from other veterans who've been separated longer, who have learned to be a part of the community, and offer advice, especially to those who are recently separated, on how to, you know, blend back in and be productive. And because obviously it doesn't take a lot to look around and see that our society doesn't have a whole lot of structure anymore.
And I appreciate that so much. I think that's so important, because you guys have, and women have, that shared background. You know, you speak the same language. You know what they're going through, what they know what you went through, in a way that a civilian can't explain. Even if they want to help and want to kind of help them reintegrate or whatever, they just don't have that context.
Right.
It can even be helpful.
Well, and that's true. In many cases, a lot of times, at least my experience, both personal and with other veterans as it relates to PTSD, which some refer to as PTS now.
Right.
You know, you can't, it's not something you can read from a book.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not something that you can really relate to if you weren't there.
Yeah.
I find that for many people, myself included, that learning from someone who has that shared experience is way more effective, you know, than someone who's just, you know, reading what they've learned in school.
Sure.
You know, for as effective as that material is, you know, there's been lots of research in it.
Yeah.
And the truth is, we have much more benefits when it comes to that than, you know, World War II vets who, you know, literally got 50 cents for a bus and a pat on the back, and that was the end of it.
Right.
So we do offer that camaraderie and that opportunity to help one another. And we do that, and we like to help the community in part of doing that as well, as you've seen by, you know, all the memorials and stuff that we do around here. We also participate in several school programs, and and community outreach programs as well.
Cool. So kind of those living history type things.
Well, not even just military related. We do food drives with the Canby Center we did last spring. I'm expecting we'll do it again this spring. So there's other things that we do just to help out and to continue serving our community. You know, when you are a person who enlists and serves your country, that's just, it's got to be a part of who you are.
Yeah.
You know, granted, there's some of those people who sign up because they need a job or, you know, gotta find something to do with their life. But, for the most part, it's for the greater good.
Right. Right. Well, and even so, I mean, anyone who serves, whatever the reason, they sign that contract, to mm-hmm. Uncle Sam. And I think that again, regardless of the reason, like, it's deserving of honor.
Right.
Remember. Speaking of which, so as you mentioned, one of the big things that you do is kind of honoring and remembering veterans of all different kinds of generations. One event that you help organize and coordinate each year that's unique to Canby is, pretty unique from what I understand, is the Iwo Jima Remembrance Ceremony and Flag Raising Ceremony.
Correct.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, that event has been going on. This was our 25th year.
Yeah.
And,
happened just a few weeks ago, obviously.
February 22nd,
yeah.
Correct. And that particular event is not just unique to Canby, but unique nationally.
Really?
To recognize one particular event in any combat role. We recognize D-Day and things like that. But Iwo Jima was pivotal to winning the war in the Pacific.
Yeah.
It was also the greatest single loss of life for the U.S. Marine Corps in its history.
Right.
So that, not to mention that it was the largest single event for Medal of Honor awards in World War II as well.
Yeah.
So it's a big deal.
Yeah.
And we like to make sure that the sacrifices of those men on that day do not go unrecognized. And obviously also, the picture of the flag raising on Mount Suribachi, you almost can't talk about World War II without that being a part of it.
I mean, I think it might be like the most famous image from our entire military history. Like,
yeah,
it's just iconic.
I can't think of another one.
Right?
Yeah, it's, yeah.
I mean, there's certainly impactful pictures, but when you just like envision one, like just randomly, like that's the one that feels like it would come up.
Well, shortly after it happened, it was, it was on all the war bond posters. It was, being used at the beginning of just about every movie and every theater in the nation. I can't count how many movies they've made about, that event and the, even the individuals that participated in it.
Yeah.
So, it's definitely something that was worth remembering. Canby is fortunate to have a couple of Iwo Jima vets that are local to us and one that actually resides here.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that helps.
You want to shout them out?
Oh, yeah, Howard Thomas.
Yeah.
Howard Thomas is 95 now, and he was a landing craft operator.
Right.
So his job was to bring Marines to the beach. He was in the Navy. And go back for more.
Yeah.
So, and... Yeah.
When we posted our pictures from this year's event, there were a lot of people that, saw him, and were like, "Oh, so glad Howard still goes and stuff like that." So,
right.
Yeah.
Right.
Sort of a local celeb.
Yeah. We also we have Bill Cole, who lives up in Clackamas. He was not able to make it this year because of his health.
Mm.
He's been, the previous 24 years he's been there, but Bill is a unique. In and of himself, he was there the day that and on the beach at Iwo Jima. He came home, was honored to be discharged in 1945, and then when the Korean War broke out, he re-enlisted and went back and ended up at the Chosin Reservoir too.
Yeah.
So survived both of those events, which were, that's a part of Marine Corps history. I mean, it's
right.
It's almost a fable.
Speaking of ice boxes, right?
Exactly. From the sandbox to the ice box.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
But the memorial over there, if you've, I know you covered it and you've taken some pictures. You know, the sand that is scattered on the memorial rock is from Iwo Jima.
So explain that, because that's such a beautiful part of the ceremony with the sand and the sprinkling. So.
Yeah. Well, we have several veterans who have returned to the island of Iwo Jima over the years.
That famous black sand.
That famous black sand, yeah.
Infamous, I guess.
Right, yeah. And they do allow you to bring back a controlled amount of the sand. Mm-hmm. So, and we have had enough of it returned to us to where we can present some of that sand to survivors and veterans. And so by scattering a piece of that island on that memorial, it makes a connection between the two. So it becomes a part of the island.
And it's open to not just veterans of Iwo Jima or of World War II?
Well, no. World War II and Iwo Jima veterans and their survivors.
Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah. And then, of course, dignitaries as well. So we like to recognize, you know, Mayor Brian Hodson and some of the other dignitaries that come and participate in the program.
Yeah.
To also take part in that part of it. So,
sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really cool. You had a great quote, I thought, Martin, again, with the pictures and posting them on Facebook, just why you do it, why you keep the ceremony going, and why you work so hard to honor that generation.
Well, I want to honor them while they're here.
Yeah.
Because the sacrifices they made, you know, as a veteran myself and several others, you know, our sacrifice pales in comparison to theirs, you know, as far as the loss of life and the what's the word I'm looking for? The well, I'm struggling for words here right now, but the sacrifices that they made,
yeah.
You know, both on the home front,
yeah,
and you know, they didn't have the communication that we have now. You know,
right.
They write a letter, and you know, in many cases, by the time the letter got home, they were killed in action.
Yeah.
You know, and then they may not get a response at all. Sometimes it would be, you know, I've met guys who didn't get their letters that were sent back to them until they got back to the States.
Right. Right.
So they were gone 2 years and didn't get a letter.
Yeah.
You know. So it's important to let them know that we haven't forgotten while they're here. But most importantly, we need to remember, and I think this is what you're referring to, we need to remember and cherish the sacrifices of the entire generation that helped us to win that war. Because we have experienced a time of prosperity in this nation that just would not be possible without it.
Yeah.
And we can never forget that. We can never forget the kind of people, the community, and the kind of citizens it took to do what they needed to do to make sure that not just our country, but the world at large experienced a freedom that only Americans have the birthright to have. I mean, that's really what it comes down to.
Yeah.
We can't forget. We can't forget what the cost of everything we had was.
Yeah.
And the people who paid the cost. And that's what it really comes down to for me.
Well, I absolutely agree with you. I think you said it really well. I think you saw this past time when I was out there with my little 4-year-old.
Yes,
son.
I did.
And trying to explain to him afterward who these guys were, why, what we did that morning, you know, why we were there, and talking about the World War II generation, and finally was able to make the connection with him, my 4-year-old, by comparing it to Captain America, because
right.
he knows Captain America. And I said, these guys were like Captain America, where they saved people and they saved the world, but they really did it, you know.
Exactly.
And Captain America is just a story. These guys were real heroes, just like Captain America.
They were the real Captain America.
Right.
Yeah.
And just seeing his face light up, like, was really cool. And I just, I don't know, that was a cool moment for me. Did you have something else you were going to share?
Well, you know, there was another veteran that was there.
Robin.
Robin. Did you get to talk to Robin?
So I know him from Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs
because
we operate that home where he lives in Lebanon. So, we've done stories
on
him.
We had
his face on the cover of a magazine that I edited before. But
I know.
Yeah,
can you imagine having your
20th birthday and that day hits the sands.
I just can't imagine. But you know, I mean, it's been a long time ago, but you know, I mean, I turned 19 and in the sands of the Middle East, so you know, I can relate, you know. Burning oil wells and you know exploded tanks and all that kind of stuff.
One cool thing about Robin this past year, so he was a Marine paratrooper from that war and from Iwo Jima.
Mm-hmm.
And after, when we talk about kind of passing on to the next generation, there was this amazing moment at this year's ceremony where afterward, and I don't know if this was planned or what, but he wanted to speak to a large group of Marine recruits from Recruit Depot, and I swear, Martin, like, the pictures are just unbelievable, because he has these, like, big, burly, like, guys and gals, and they're just gathered around him, sitting on their, sitting, like, Indian style in some cases, like preschoolers, just listening to the story time. I don't mean to belittle it,
but it's called a school circle.
Yeah.
Yes.
Just listening to his stories and his wisdom. It was such a cool moment.
That actually was not planned ahead.
Yeah.
Recruit Depot Portland and Recruit Depot Oregon City were invited to the event, which we always enjoy having them come.
Yeah.
And
because this is such an important part of our military history overall, but especially our Marine military.
Well, and as I said during the event, which you may remember, it's important for them to know, and I called them out specifically. It's important for them to know the legacy that they represent. You know, that they literally have a responsibility to men and women, you know, like Robin and like Howard Thomas and you know, all these stories that you hear, you know, about the military and about the Marines as it applies to this event, it's important that they understand that it's not just about them. That, you know, they're carrying the flag for us, you know, and that flag gets passed forward as time goes by.
Yeah.
And one of the recruiting officers came to me just before the event after he had learned of Robin's story.
Yeah.
And asked if Robin would like to talk to them and share his story.
Right.
And
Robin has never turned down that invitation.
Exactly. He was more than happy.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
Cool.
So he's such a great guy.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I'm actually looking forward to, we're going to go down there and spend some time with him
good.
Here in a little
yeah.
while.
Yeah,
so.
Just amazing guy. I never don't see him without a smile on his face, like, you know, and he just makes you light up, so yeah.
Yeah, and it's important for younger generations, even younger than my, you know, my generation, to hear these stories firsthand and to be able to carry those stories forward, you know.
Yeah.
And hopefully, you know, there was a quote that I do not know who to attribute it to, but I really enjoy it. It says, you know, if you want to thank a veteran, be an American worth fighting for.
That's cool.
I don't know who said it, but it was pretty good.
Yeah, that's a good one. I think you should just take credit for it at that point.
Well, okay.
Martin Lightning.
It wasn't mine. I'm saying it here now, but I'm willing to admit I heard it elsewhere.
Yeah, very cool. Well, again, just to wrap up here, but when you talk about the keeping the story alive for future generations, unfortunately, like you talk about, these guys, you know, we're losing World War II vets at an alarming rate. Someday, hopefully many years from now, but someday we will be in an America without any World War II vets. Does the ceremony need to continue and keep going? I mean, I assume...
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Because the story needs to be told.
Yeah.
And it needs to be told forever.
Yeah.
You know? And you know, I mean, it's just like with the Civil War and the Revolutionary War and World War I, we still tell those stories.
Yeah.
You know, so I think it's important. What makes some of them different about World War I and World War II than earlier is the scale of the loss of life.
Yeah.
Because of the mechanism of war at the time.
Yeah.
And I think that's why it's so important that the scale was so large and they knew it.
Yeah.
And they still went anyway.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you know.
We lost more service members in World War II than in Korea, Vietnam, World War I, the Gulf, Afghanistan, and Iraq combined.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. And these men, and there were a few women, so I like to give them credit.
Yeah.
These men knew that going in, mm-hmm. you know. So yeah. Just to be able to face those odds and know. And on top of that, I mean, when you were, you know, on that landing craft heading toward that beach, you know, and the rounds were already bouncing off the hull, and you knew that gate was coming down. And when that gate come down, you had no protection anymore.
Right.
And you saw, you know, all those tracer rounds and all that, you know, explosions on the beach and stuff.
Yeah.
And to still go forward.
Yeah. That's courage.
Courage, under the worst possible circumstances. You know, in many ways, nearly every one of them should have gotten the Congressional Medal of Honor.
Right.
Just for storming that beach. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, thank you, Martin. Thanks for your time talking to us.
My pleasure.
And thanks for all the work that you and the VFW Post does to honor and remember this generation and all our veterans. I'm here at Advantage Mortgage with Derek Hill. And Derek, you were telling me about something that just came down from Fannie Mae that people might be interested in.
Yeah, Fannie Mae just came out with a report that said that the average homeowner in the United States has approximately 70% equity in their home.
Wow.
Right. I mean, that's obviously average throughout the whole country. But because values have come up so substantially in the last 10 years, there is a ton of equity available that people can utilize.
Cool. So if people are potentially like looking to buy or move into a new home, you're saying that equity means it might be something that you would look at remodeling instead of if the market's not looking favorable to you.
Right, 100%. Because the market in Portland is so tough to buy, you know, we have an average of like 2.5 months worth of inventory, so it's just super hard for people to find what they're looking for. It may be just easier for them to take out some equity and do the upgrades or do an addition or pay off some debt or lots of different things. And that's one of the things that we love to do with people is sit down with them and kind of go over a game plan. You know,
Cool. Just
that's one of the biggest things is knowing what you can do. And we love taking the time to do that for people.
Awesome. Awesome. And people can find you on your website or just give you a call.
They can go to findtheadvantage.com or call 266-5800, obviously 503 area code. And we love to chit-chat. And we have, you know, 8 or 9 different loan officers here in the Canby office that would love to sit down with somebody and work with them.
Cool. Thanks, Derek.
So just remember, Derek Hill, NMLS number 50183, Advantage Mortgage, NMLS number 177059, equal housing opportunity.
Canby then is brought to you by The Book Nook, Canby's amazing local bookstore and gift shop, your source for new and used books, comic books, audiobooks, vintage books, and well, you get the idea. All things books across from the backstop in downtown Canby. Please support our unique locally owned businesses in such a time as this, which is a difficult time.
In such a time as this.
I indeed. Read it wrong, but I tried to go with
That's
it.
That's okay. It has a very kind of biblical.
Yeah, I'm trying to be all epic. Yes, Charles Heston right
there
now.
There you go. Hey, this is Canby Then, the segment where we would normally share with you fun and colorful stories from our community's past. But today, we stand in the unique position of living through history. We as a community have experienced events we have never experienced before and never will again. I mean,
like, we hope so.
We hope so. Like one can only
really hope,
right?
So
who knows? Maybe 50, 75, or even 100 years from now. What do you mean? Like, I think in 20 years from now, some plucky young podcaster will be telling historical stories about what we're experiencing right now. So let's give them something to work with. This week, our very own Tyler Frankie, love that guy, went on Facebook and asked Canby a simple question. How are you holding up? And this is what you said. This is an oral history of Canby in the midst of the COVID-19 crisis.
Thanks for asking. I'm doing well. I teach students in China remotely, so I've been living with Corona since January. So I understand that all of this is still kind of surreal. Now my students and parents are encouraging me. Now my students and parents are encouraging me. I also work for another company that provides products to addresses to, I also work for another company that provides products to address all the health issues that we are concerned with. So the interest is high for people seeking information and wanting what we have. It's been busy these last 2 days. I opened shopping accounts so people can shop online and have it come directly to their door. So life is crazy right now, but all is good and we will get through this.
I love that sentiment. Here's another story. Monday was a hard day. My husband is in management in the restaurant business. And our prayers go out to everyone in the restaurant and hospitality industry.
Kids are bored. My business is dead. And I think I have now seen everything on Netflix.
Truly an accomplishment.
I mean, if you have the time.
I think that
there's some stuff I wouldn't want to see.
That's extraordinary. Yeah. Really extraordinary. And then you can like VPN to like other countries and get a whole new
get
library.
Get all their stuff.
Yes.
Yeah, Bollywood like, stuff, man.
Whew,
yeah.
All right, we've got options. Here's another one. Working from home, doctor called me this morning and grounded me.
Oh.
She said I'm high risk, and if I catch coronavirus, my prognosis is grim.
Jeez.
All right, social distancing for you. All the best.
I'm doing well, but I feel like I should be doing something to help. Oh, I know how you feel. I'm used to self-isolation after studying for the bar exam and am able to work from home, so I'm lucky there. My family is all safe, but I worry about my daughter, who is in the arts up until yesterday worked in restaurants in Seattle. I can't stress enough how important it is for everyone to stay home. Please, just stay home if you can.
Yeah, indeed. Here's another one. It's hard. My husband is in the auto industry and the sales are down 70% compared to last year at this time. And if they don't sell cars, he has none to paint. So this is not going to be fun.
Here's, life is good. God is with us. Just keep the faith and pray. It helps to get relaxed. God bless you all.
Isn't that interesting? It helps to get relaxed. Maybe, yeah, I think that's probably right.
I was expecting, I read it and I don't know why. I just, in my head, imagined faith and prayer bath bombs.
Yeah, okay. That's
just let it dissolve and relax.
Thank you for taking that thought out of your head and putting it in
mine. Everybody else's.
Yep. All right. Here's another one. My daughter has cystic fibrosis, which puts her in the high-risk category. And that's a really useful point. This is not what they said, but that it's not just those who are elderly who are most at risk, but those who are immunocompromised in a lot of ways. And oftentimes, people, that's not often visible. And so
it can be scary because you might not even know.
Right.
Like, I've been worried. I have asthma.
Oh,
and
sure.
And that's one of the big ones is people with asthma can get hard. I'm not saying I'm super worried, but it is in the back of my head there.
Okay. Well, I'm at least 6 feet away from you now.
Yeah.
Just to let the listeners know. My daughter has cystic fibrosis, which puts her in the high risk category. We pulled our little guy from daycare to protect her as much as we can. My husband and I both have essential jobs, so we social distance ourselves from our coworkers as much as we can. My mom just finished chemo 2 weeks ago and is set to start radiation at the end of the month. My dad is in his late 70s, has had 2 heart attacks, diabetes, crappy lungs. I am just trying to keep a touch of sanity and do the best I can to keep those I love safe.
Yes. Yeah. Lots of thinking about a lot of other people right now. And I like this one. I went and got supplies/goodies to take to my mom and staff at Pheasant Point since they are on lockdown. Dropped them off at the door and waved hello. I have the utmost respect for all the staff taking good care of our loved ones.
All right, so Tyler, let me ask you this question. Yeah. What is your goodie of choice in a coronavirus quarantine?
That's a hard question. My wife and I legitimately went out and got like the best ramens that we can because they're cheap and easy to make.
Okay.
Right? Worst case scenario, we go down to the creek, grab some water and boil the water. Like we do ramen like hardcore old style pioneers if we need to. But if we're going like real like treats, delights, you know those zebra cakes?
No.
They're like the little, not, I don't know if they're Hostess, but they're like the, they're like ding dongs and
okay.
and Swiss rolls and all that. Zebra cakes, man. Okay. I could chow down on zebra cakes.
All right, there you go.
What about you? What's yours?
Oh, what is my go-to thing? You know, my wife brought home a frozen Marie Callender. Is that how you pronounce that?
Like yeah.
A peanut butter pie.
Oh,
it's just
so
thaw
good.
And serve. Yeah. And I was like, I told her never do this again.
My problem is it takes too long to thaw.
Oh my gosh. So good. So that's my weakness. Here's another one. I want to do what I can to help. I'm a nursing student. While I'm not, quote, qualified to do anything. Yes, you are. You're qualified to stay at home and social distance. I want to help however I can. If you or someone you know needs help with shopping, if you need help setting up teleconference with your doctor, I can do that. Please let me know. God bless this person. What an attitude. Man, people are good.
We are fine. It is a confusing time, and I am so concerned for health workers, especially at Kaiser, not permitted to wear face masks when they need them and not protected. It's a scary time, and the ones that we need to take care of us are not being taken care of.
Oh, yes. All the best for our healthcare professionals.
I think maybe that first sentence, we are fine, should actually be read, we are the ones that are fine. They are the ones that need to be taken care of.
It's true. It's true. All right. Here's another one. I am remote teaching and broadcasting live to my virtual classrooms. Shout out to all the teachers having to figure out how to do class online right now. It's a fun to learn something new. I never would have learned this otherwise, but man, it's a lot of preparation.
Yeah. Thinking about what they are missing because of the school closures has been very hard. I'm guessing they're talking about students. The girls had a full calendars with band and state theater competitions and sports. After the tears came boredom and stressing the unknown future. They aren't even a week into this. It's going to be a long spring. I'm putting up my Christmas lights this week.
I love it.
Ah, that's such a good idea. I didn't even think about that. That's
right.
So cool. Yep. The world needs something to smile about. That's such a good idea.
Yeah. Put up your Christmas lights.
Put up your Christmas lights, guys.
Put up your Christmas
lights,
ladies and gentlemen.
Shine.
All right, here's another. I work for two local companies, both of whom have had to temporarily lay me off.
Oh, jeez.
But my husband has a great job and is working for now, even if they run out of tasks. I think, fingers crossed, he will continue to be paid. He works for a school district and he's currently on cleaning duty, but his usual job is electrician. So feeling grateful, very grateful for that, I'm home with my two boys, amazed at how much they actually eat in a day. Yes. Just trying to find the joy in a new normal. Cooking a lot, dabbling in some fun online learning activities, thinking about weeding my garden to get ready for planting. Keep thinking.
Yeah.
Those weeds aren't going anywhere.
Yeah. I started getting a sore throat and cough last Tuesday, and I've stuck around the house since then. On work days, I've been working from home. It feels weird to telecommute when my job is only a quarter of a mile from my house, but I'm certainly glad to have the opportunity. My management and coworkers are supportive and happy that I'm contributing while also keeping the risk down. So that's nice. Overall, everything is good. I'm just hoping everyone else is able to make it through this.
God bless this person. Good choices. Here's another one. It's just surreal. I think that's a really good word for it.
Yeah.
I'm trying to process the historical nature of what is happening. It's very much akin to the feeling surrounding 9/11, but certainly different in its own way. These times will be what we talk about to future generations. I'm trying to put aside anxiety for economic hardship for my family and my neighbors in hopes that at the very least everyone has the chance to stay well. And all this on a sunny, beautiful day that shows the earth will continue to turn.
I'm scared, to be honest. We are in unprecedented times. That's the right word, right? Yes, it is.
Mm-hmm.
And while I know it's better to overreact than underreact, I'm worried about the future of my business and how the closures will affect it. We're good, but loss of income is a scary thing. especially when I still have expenditures and debt responsibility that doesn't go away when there is no business.
Isn't that the case?
Yeah. Life goes on.
It's true. While I always appreciate any extra days I get to spend with my teenagers who are growing too quickly, I am mourning the days one by one that my senior is missing out on the last moments before graduation, if there even will be one. It all happened so fast, and we are processing and grieving and being careful and appreciative of what we do have, including health and healthy friends and family. We have thought about how to positively give to those around us. We've slept in and played cards and baked together a bit, but major life moments being changed is heavy on my mind right now.
My mom got laid off because she works at a restaurant. Pretty afraid we might lose our house.
Oh my goodness.
Just a grim couple sentences right there.
Well, I thought I was doing pretty good, but this morning I am feeling the weight of it. I know it will pass. Thought I would not have to go out today, but then I realized I had a couple of things I need, and I'd have to go shopping. So I'm not looking forward to going to the store. This will pass as I do some cleaning and walk the dog in nature. So the real winners of all of this, by the way, yeah, are our dogs.
Yeah.
So I live right next to a place where people come and bring their dogs and they
sure
go for walks and stuff,
yeah,
like that. And especially working from home, I'm looking out my window and there are probably 5x, maybe 10x the number of people with their dogs,
yeah,
out strolling.
They're enjoying. They're, yep, like, we don't know what's going on, but
our humans are around, yeah, a lot more. Yeah. So there you go.
Oh, man. This person says, I am a bit concerned. I manage a truck shop, with 12 people who work for me and truck drivers passing through there all night. Who knows what these truck drivers have been in contact with, but we're busy and we got to keep the trucks on the road so that they can get groceries and other goods to the stores. We also opened up a salon in February that my wife manages, and we have a building lease to pay. We could probably get by on just my income, except for the lease payment on the building and loan payment on the business. I also worry about the girls who lease stations from us because they need money to live on as well. A lot is up in the air right now, and it's concerning. Luckily, my job isn't going anywhere, unless I get sick.
Yeah. This person is scared for my family members with compromised immune systems, scared for my lower middle class friends who don't qualify for assistance, and this is detrimental for survival. Stressed as I'm trying to keep as many as I can afloat and making runs to the grocery stores for friends who can't. Scared to cough and to be sent home and lose income. It just all feels so surreal. Can someone pinch me to wake up? No, I'm sorry.
I'm doing okay. Wish I could get some hand sanitizer somewhere, though. I'm a little concerned at some point I won't be able to get my safe foods. I'm diabetic and very strict. Just feeling bad for how this will impact many people.
This person is still looking for TP.
Aren't we all?
And then writes the, what is that, laughing crying face emoji?
Yeah.
Made the mistake of thinking folks would realize that if we just bought toilet paper like normal, the shortage we created would balance out. But whoops. With mom's cancer, we are social distancing like crazy, so maybe we will get lucky and find some before our last rolls are gone. Crooked smiling for crying face emoji. So yeah, good luck with that, guys.
Yeah. As together as I think I am most of the time, I have to say all of this has my stress and anxiety levels elevated. Praying for all of us to see what is actually happening and for the common sense to do the right things. Be kind.
Yeah, be kind indeed. Yeah. You know, is that phrase that says, like, be kind, you never know what somebody's going through?
Yeah.
I feel like now it's like, be kind. We all
we're
know
all
what,
going
we
through
all know what we're all going through. I'm struggling some days. My oldest turns 21 next week. We won't be able to take him out for dinner like we had planned. My middle son is a senior, and I'm preparing myself for the possibility of no graduation ceremony. These are just some of the, quote, minor things on my mind. And then just two of the straight crying face emojis. Yeah.
TT. What was secure a month ago has now become insecure and unknown, which creates anxiety in everyone. they don't call it a storm for nothing. I think that's really what the biggest problem is, right? Because humans are more afraid of what they don't know. That's what this is an unknown.
It is unknown.
This person says, well, since my husband and I are both in the service industry, we pretty much lost our jobs yesterday. So that is pretty rough. Oh my goodness, yes it is. But they say, we have each other. And that's a lot. What a beautiful sentiment.
My last one, not the last one, but my last one is, we are all in this together. My hubby and I are way past being seniors, but we are so blessed to live in a great neighborhood where two different neighbors have shopped for us already. Hearts, hearts. When this anxiety gets heavy, start counting your blessings, because you will find you have more than you know. Hearts.
Indeed.
This person will conclude with this one. Says, I am really sad. I'm sick, so staying at home. And even when I'm better, staying at home is best. But I miss the buzz of being out in town. I'm so extroverted, and it's hard for me. Yes, introverted friends, check on your extroverted friends. They're all dying.
Yeah.
And I'm also scared for our jobs. My husband makes some money from music, but he has had to cancel all of his shows, and the rest from a large company that serves small businesses. They're quick to lay off in a disruption. I own a real estate company, and my industry can be very volatile at times like this. We have four kids, and while we saved enough to weather a storm, I don't know how long this is going to last, and it makes me nervous. I'm also worried about our most vulnerable people in town and in our lives. I want everyone to survive this, and it saddens me to think that some of us will lose family members, friends, and neighbors. But I'm also an optimist at heart, and I'm just trying to do my part to help people as best I can, and hoping we all come through this and can hug each other on the other side. Tyler, I look forward to giving you a hug once the social distancing
in a few weeks,
is all
in
over.
A month. Yeah, man. Thanks for sitting down with me and reading all of these.
Yeah.
I know Frankie's been doing a lot to try and reach people out in the community. And I posted yesterday and again today that I want your guys' stories, not just of what you're going through in coronavirus, more stories of your life here in Canby, or sure, good things in Canby. So I highly, highly, highly recommend and urge you guys, write me a story. It doesn't have to be long. It can be short, just like these, or it can be a longer one if you have a really good one. And send it to us. You can email me at tyler@canbynow.com. I don't usually use that email, so that's a new one for me. But yeah, please write these in so that we can share your good stories of Canby and community and all of that with the people that listen to our show. So thanks, guys.
Absolutely. Canby, you guys are wonderful. Stay strong, stay safe, stay socially distant.
Tyler, did you know that the Australian lyrebird can mimic any sound that it hears? Even chainsaws?
No, that's super interesting.
Did you know that a baby puffin is called a puffling? Or no. That baby sea otters can't swim, so their moms wrap them up in pieces of kelp until they learn how to paddle?
Wait, do you know any trivia that isn't like animal related?
Not really, but here's some stuff you may not know about the Wild Hare Saloon, where Canby goes to eat and have fun.
Okay.
The Wild Hare is one of Canby's longest running locally owned restaurants. Owners Joan and Darren Moden have been in business for 16 years.
That's cool.
Yeah, heck, you were just a baby back then. And they love to give back. They've been members of the Canby Chamber for that long, and they donate over $20,000 to local sports, FFA programs, and civic organizations each year.
Wow, I'm legitimately like caught off. That's cool.
Yeah. They also support more than 30 jobs in the community through their award-winning staff, some of them as young as 18. Hey, that's older than you are.
Dude, I'm 10 months younger than you.
With the days getting longer and the weather getting warmer, the Canby Wild Hare's expansive outdoor patio is the place to be. Furry friends, welcome.
Well, that sounds great. I'm going to go check them out just off of Highway 99E next to the Space Age in Canby at 1656 Beaver Creek Road in Oregon City, or on their website at thewildhairsaloon.net. The Canby Now podcast is produced by me, Tyler Clausen. Our content director and star reporter is Tyler Frankie. We also feature the vocal talents of Joy Struby and James Walden. So round of applause to them. The song that you're hearing right now is Canby by singer-songwriter Olivia Harms, used with her permission. Find more of her work at olivia13.com.
The Can Be Now podcast is dedicated to preserving independent local journalism and redefining local news with our fun, fresh, and energetic brand of storytelling. Our sincere thanks to our local sponsors who make this show possible. Please show your appreciation by supporting the small businesses who support us.
The Can Be Now podcast is a production of Now Hear This Studios, Canby's locally owned full-service audio, video, and media production company. Our mission is to produce the best content in the universe, and we'd love to help you do it. Find us online at nhtstudios.com.
I will take a motion to adjourn.
I just moved it.
I didn't even ask for it, though.